Your headlines for this hour: Iran's leader tells the visiting Sultan of Oman that regional countries should be aware of the Israeli regime's divisive policies. Sudan's warring rivals agree to 5-day extension of the country's shaky truce after heavy clashes rocked the capital, Khartoum. North Korea confirms it will launch a reconnaissance satellite next month to monitor the military activities of the U.S. and its partners in real time. Thank you for joining us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says all-out expansion of ties with Oman will benefit both countries. Ayatollah Khamenei says Tehran and Muscat should continue their negotiations with seriousness to get tangible results that lead to expanded relations. The leader made the comment in a meeting with visiting Sultan of Oman, Haytham bin Tariq. Ayatollah Khamenei also underlined the significance of increased cooperation between Iran and Oman, seeing how they share what he called the very important Strait of Hormuz. The leader also warned about the risk posed by Israel in the region, saying the regime and its supporters seek discord amongst regional countries. Ayatollah Khamenei also hailed the Iranian government's efforts to improve relations with regional countries, including Saudi Arabia. He noted that Iran is also open to restoration of ties with Egypt. Earlier during the meeting, the Sultan of Oman said Egypt was willing to restore diplomatic ties with Iran. He also said Muscat seeks closer cooperation with neighboring countries, especially Iran. Sayyid Mohammad Marandi is a university professor and political analyst. He puts into context the Omani Sultan's visit to Iran.
Iranian-Omani relations have always been good, and cooperation has always existed at very different levels, both political and economic ties. And Oman wants to become a hub for business as well, and Iran is an ideal partner. But I think after the rapprochement between Iran and Saudi Arabia and the changes that are taking place across West Asia and the Persian Gulf, the Saudis rethinking their ties with Syria, negotiating with Yemen, and the potential for the formation of a government in Lebanon, along with other changes that we see between countries in the Persian Gulf region, small countries that have been under the sway of Saudi Arabia. These changes together, I think, bring about a new era for our region. And Oman, having this very good relationship with Iran, stands to benefit a lot from these changes.
Iranian national Hamid Nouri continues to linger in Swedish jails in conditions which his lawyers have described as appalling. Nouri's lawyers have questioned his trial process and criticized the way he's being treated in jail. They say he's been held in solitary confinement for more than 3 years now. Nouri is prevented from visiting his family members. They've also slammed Swedish authorities for denying Nouri access to documents crucial for his defense. Nouri was arrested upon arrival in Stockholm in November 2019. Swedish prosecutors accuse him of involvement in the execution of members of the Mujahideen Khalq organization. That's a terrorist group responsible for the killing of at least 12,000 Iranians. Tehran has rejected the accusations against Nouri as politically motivated. Head of the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting has called on cultural assemblies of the resistance front to launch a new movement to portray various dimensions of Palestinians' resistance against the Zionist regime. Peyman Jebeli made the proposal while meeting with the leader of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad resistance movement, Ziad al-Nakhala, in Lebanon. The IRIB chief highlighted the recent heroic victories of the Palestinian people that he believes exposed the increasing vulnerability of the Israeli regime. Al-Nakhala, for his part, said the resistance has changed the equations on the ground in his favor, shattering Israel's dream of being a superhero in the region.
RIIB chief, Iran's national broadcaster, Peyman Jebeli, is on an official visit to Lebanon, where he has met top officials. A meeting with Lebanon's culture minister was seen by both figures as significant in order to boost bilateral cooperation on all levels, especially in the cultural sector.
As we had together faced the threat of military war, we together must face together in collaboration this cultural war, this war that intends to destruct our awareness of what in real is happening in the region.
The highlight of the trip was a tour to towns in southern Lebanon. Head of the IRIB told reporters as he overlooked occupied Palestine that the resistance has recorded a historic achievement after inflicting the heaviest defeat on the Israeli regime when it was forced to withdraw from Lebanon. But this victory is something that needs to be honored and protected by the media.
We, the media, with our role to narrate these stories of heroic stances, victories, and highlight the significance of what occurred, have a huge responsibility. A military operation would be limited in space and time, but the job of the media needs to persist in all places and at all times. My presence here as head of the IRIB, and in this town of Marun Aras, which overlooks occupied Palestine, is a symbolic and hopefully practical statement of unity and joint efforts with our brothers in the media of resistance.
IRIB CEO told Press TV that this visit is aimed at strengthening the unity and cooperation among media outlets which support the resistance.
As part of the effort to form, as in the military field, the resistance groups could do a coordinated effort and form the coordinated operation rooms. High on agenda was that to form the same unity among the resistance media. So as part of that, he had meetings with high-ranking Lebanese officials and people in the resistance groups.
Mr. Jebeli had met earlier with Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah, who discussed some new and bright ideas on ways to cooperate with all resistance media, especially in Lebanon and Palestine. During their meeting, the head of the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting and Hezbollah Secretary General both stressed the need to strengthen other facets of resistance, namely to confront the mass media campaign, which targets the people of the region. Maryam Saleh from Marun Aras, South Lebanon.
A ceremony has been held in the Iranian capital to pay tribute to outstanding scientific achievements and contributions. During the event, the country's most prestigious scientific award was handed out. Our correspondent Gisu Misha Ahmadi was at the ceremony for more details.
The Order of Knowledge, as it has been dubbed. Now, this is the highest award that any scientist in Iran can be awarded with. And, of course, it is the first time after the Islamic Revolution that this award is being given to scientists in different fields. I'm in the middle of the ceremony where scientists are being called upon stage to be awarded the Order of Knowledge. As I told you before, it is a very important occasion, not just for the scientists themselves, Marzia, but also for their students and people who have been following scientific scientific achievements in Iran. This is actually more a motivation for those students and people who are working in scientific fields, doing research, knowing that what they do will be acknowledged. And of course, I have to tell you that there are 12 awards that are going to be given to 12 of the professors in different science fields. These people have been chosen after a shortlist of 100 professors from across the country.
Now we have discussed the ongoing Israeli atrocities against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank in our news review program. Here's more.
And now it's time for this hour's news review. Palestinians hold a funeral for a man killed by Israeli forces during a raid in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin. 37-year-old Ashraf Mohammed Ibrahim was shot while confronting the storming of Jenin by occupation forces. Another Palestinian succumbed to his injuries sustained in an Israeli raid in Al-Khalil 2 days ago. And earlier today, regime forces also raided a village near Ramallah, wounding 2 more Palestinians there. The regime has intensified its crackdown across the occupied territories in recent months. Nearly 150 Palestinians have lost their lives in Israeli attacks in the West Bank so far this year. I'd like to welcome my guests to this news review. First, Mona Kandil out of Ramallah, and Charlotte Cates, International Coordinator, Samadoun, Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network out of Vancouver. Thank you both for being with us. Well, Mona, can you fill us in on the latest and what has taken place today?
We have to mention that Ibrahim spent 11 years behind bars, and then he was released. He was an officer of the Palestinian Security Forces, according to the Palestinian Authority. It's not clear whether Ibrahim engaged in direct clashes with the Israeli forces or not. However, the Israeli military issued a statement saying that its troops came under fire during the raid to Jenin City, and that they wounded 8 Palestinians. One of them was in serious condition. 6 others were arrested by the Israeli forces in Jenin. The Israeli soldiers seized with them from Jenin the weapons and other military equipment.
Thank you, Mona. Well, Charlotte, I mean, already the Palestinians basically are living in this hell that Israel has created. And now it's hell on top of hell as they exacerbate these attacks. What's going on? Why do we see the regime? I mean, on a daily basis, unfortunately, we're reporting about more and more Palestinians being killed. Why are we seeing this at this time?
Unfortunately, I mean, the Zionist regime, since its inception in 1948 and before, has always followed a policy of attempting to eliminate the Palestinian people from the land of Palestine by all means, including, you know, by direct force and violence, through extrajudicial killings, through the confiscation of land, the demolition of houses. And all of that for over 75 years has failed to break the resistance of the Palestinian people. But what we also see is that whenever there is a growth in resistance, the Zionist regime is dedicated to wipe that out. It wants to just absolutely suppress Palestinians from struggling for their freedom and struggling for their liberation and struggling even for their most basic rights. And so in an attempt to crush that resistance, we see these brutal raids taking place night after night, the invasion of houses, the explosion of doors from people's homes, the demolishing of homes that are owned by entire families in order to impose collective punishment on a Palestinian prisoner. All of this is an attempt to erase and suppress the resistance of the Palestinian people that the Zionist regime has been unable to do for 75 years.
What about that, Mona? Your assessment, you're on the ground there. Are you seeing actually the resistance picking up energy, or do you see intimidation of the resistance? Your overall assessment of what Israel is trying to do and the reality of what's on the ground?
Well, in the last few years, let's say the last 2 years, a number of Palestinian newly formed resistance groups had been active in several areas across the occupied West Bank. In Jenin, there was the Jenin Brigade, in Nablus, the Alliance Den, in Ariha also, Ariha's Brigade. So these newly formed Palestinian resistance groups have proved every day, or continue to prove, that all its members are young Palestinians who were not affiliated in any of the Palestinian well-known resistance groups like the Hamas movement, Jihad, or Fatah, or even the leftist wings here in the occupied West Bank. Despite the fact that the Israelis continue to raid Palestinian areas on a daily basis, all these Israeli measures did not succeed to intimidate the Palestinians. However, Palestinians today are even more determined, are united to continue resisting the Israeli forces, even if more people are being killed, others are being arrested, their homes are being destroyed, and their lands are being confiscated. But at the end of the day, nothing would bring them to their knees, and they would continue to fight the Israeli soldiers.
Well, thank you both for being with me on this news review. Mona Kandu out of Ramallah, Charlotte Cates, International Coordinator, Samadun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network out of Vancouver.
The U.S. and Saudi Arabia say Sudan's warring factions have agreed to a five-day extension of a fragile ceasefire deal. The mediators said the original ceasefire deal, which was signed on May 20th, allowed the delivery of humanitarian aid despite repeated violations. They said the extension will permit further humanitarian efforts. Heavy clashes and airstrikes rocked the Sudanese capital on Monday as the ceasefire came to an end. Sudan's army and the paramilitary rapid support forces have been locked in a power struggle that erupted into conflict on April 15th. Hundreds of people have been killed and nearly 1.4 million people driven from their homes. The UN says a record 25 million people are in need of humanitarian aid and protection in Sudan. North Korea says it will launch its first military reconnaissance satellite despite Japan's threats to shoot it down. Pyongyang did not specify the exact launch date, but it said it needs the satellite in June for live monitoring of U.S. military activities in the region. The U.S. and its regional ally, South Korea, began their latest joint military exercises last week to simulate what they called a full-scale attack from North Korea. Earlier, Japan vowed to shoot down any projectile threatening its territory. Tokyo said North Korea's potential missile launch would be a serious violation of UN Security Council resolutions. It urged Pyongyang to refrain from the launch. Well, that's it for this hour's bulletin. Take care and bye-bye.
Bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
Limelight.
Experts say the freezing of Russia's forex holdings has accelerated de-dollarization around the world. IMF has recently said that the share of U.S. dollar in global reserves has reached to its lowest level in 28 years. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT noted, the process of diversifying away from the greenback by countries around the world is gathering pace according to the latest data from the International Monetary Fund. The statistics tracked by the Washington-based institution show that the dollar's share of official gold and foreign currency reserves dropped to a nearly three-decade low of 58% in the fourth quarter of 2022. The move has reportedly been gradual, and the dollar share of central banks' foreign reserves is now nearly down to a level last seen in 1995. The long-standing status of the dollar as the world's dominant currency has been steadily eroded in recent years amid concerns over soaring U.S. debt and widely implemented sanctions using the currency as leverage. The shift was more pronounced when adjusted for exchange rates, according to Stephen Jen, CEO of Eurozone SLJ Capital Limited, as quoted by Reuters. He said, "What happened in 2022 was a very sharp plummeting in the dollar share in real terms, calling the decline a reaction to the freezing of half of Russia's $640 billion in gold and FX reserves." According to Jen, the drastic step sparked a rethink in countries like Saudi Arabia, China, India, and Turkey about diversifying their reserves to other currencies. The yuan's share of global over-the-counter forex transactions has increased from nearly zero 15 years ago to 7%, according to the Bank for International Settlements, BIS. After the move against Russia, other countries are questioning, what if you fall on the wrong side of sanctions? BNY Mellon strategist Jeffrey Yu told the media. He said global central banks are currently seeking to diversify their assets, scooping up corporate debt, tangible assets such as real estate and other currencies. "This is the process that is underway," Mark Tinker, managing director of Toss Fund Hong Kong, told the agency, adding, "The dollar is going to be used less in the global system." Meanwhile, Mehr News Agency reported de-dollarization is not a voluntary choice, but it is a necessary response to the weaponization of the dollar, Iran's first vice president said recently, adding that ditching the dollar will endanger U.S. influence in the world. Addressing the 51st edition of the Asian Clearing Union ACU summit in Tehran recently, Iran's first vice president, Mohammad Mukhber, praised the intention of the ACU member states to create a new chapter of economic relations and financial and commercial interactions. A country with a size of 1.64 million square kilometers and a population of about 85 million, who are mostly young and educated people, Iran has a high capacity to attract domestic and foreign investments and take advantage of the demographic opportunities in increasing production and economic growth, Mukhber said. Vice President Mokhber examined the role of the dollar in the world economy and said, "De-dollarization is not a voluntary choice by countries anymore. It is the country's inevitable response to the weaponization project of the dollar. In the past decades, the weaponization of the dollar has forced countries to find a way to get rid of the impact of possible sanctions in the future," Mokhber further asserted, referring to the increasing number of countries that are looking to reduce their dependency on the U.S. dollar. The vice president said that the weakening of the dollar can be a serious threat to the United States' influence at the international level. Iran's first vice president went on to conclude that the Islamic Republic of Iran is ready to develop its banking and trade relations with other countries, especially ACU member states.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program of Viewpoints. I am Beta, the host of today's episode, and here with me there are two dear guest speakers, Brother Ali and Brother Hassanin. Assalamu alaikum, brothers.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So, as we talked up to here, we know that the Palestinian people are under oppression from the Israeli country and Zionism. And wherever there is a conflict, there is a past between two people. We have to find for the dark side and the bright side. And as we know here in this story, Israel is the dark side of the scene. So if you are the dark side, you have to commit some crimes to achieve this actually position in this battlefield. And I want you to elaborate more the crimes of Israel and things that they committed to achieve to this position in this battlefield. So, Brother Hassani, let's start with you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So, the crimes which were committed by the Zionist criminals during the historic events of Gaza, the massacres of civilians, the destructions of defenseless homes, the impaling of young infants, the bombing of schools and mosques, the use of phosphorus bombs and outlawed weapons, like, you know, there are a lot of crimes. These crimes lasted for several years, and there are many other numerous crimes. So this proved that the savage and criminal nature of the leaders of the Zionist regime. So, and the fake Zionist state that have not changed in the least since the early decades. It hasn't changed at all. So, you know, so there's still these crimes to be seen. And exactly the same policies and the same brutal and ruthless nature which gave rise to such tragedies as those of, you know, you see the examples, like we get the news daily, you know, about the crimes in Israel, in Palestine. So still this ruled the dark hearts and minds and thoughts today.
Yeah.
So they're still being continued.
Thank you. So, what about you, Brother Ali?
Yeah, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Before diving into the question, I'd like to differentiate between Zionism and Judaism. I want to say that there are two different things. There are some good Jewish brothers and sisters who are real believers, and they have nothing to do with Zionism.
Of course.
When we are talking about Zionism, we are not necessarily talking about the Jewish people in the world, or even in the Israel. This is first. Second, I want to say that the kind of crimes that are happening in Palestinian land and by Israeli regime is, I think, very, very rare in the history even.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't have any records, historical records, at least for the last five centuries, to some crimes like this to happen, and the rate of violence I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. On a daily basis.
on a daily basis, yeah. Even I have heard by one historian that he was claiming that in the course of history there was nothing like this. Mm-hmm. But since I myself in my mind had some cases, I did not dare even to call it, I mean, in the course of history, in the whole history, mm-hmm. there was no precedent for such crimes and violences in the history. So that's why I'm just limiting it to last 5 centuries. We have learned and read about the colonialism and the type of, let's say, crimes and violence that happened there. But even here is more and more severe and more vast. So when we heard that, for example, French army killed 1.5 million of Algerian people in during one or two years. Mm-hmm. Or we have heard that, let's say, British government killed how many people, for example, in that African country or in the other Asian country. Right. So we have too many records of such crimes and violences. But we can confess that whatever is happening now in the Palestine is even more severe and more dreadful than that. Mm-hmm. So this is one side. But more sad, but more dreadful, is the silence of Western countries and the so-called followers of human rights. Mm-hmm. So how come? Aren't the people who are living in Palestine or in that area human beings? If they are, so why are they silent? Mm-hmm. If one person is being killed or terrorized in one European country, he's... I mean, they are all condemning, I mean, the terrorists that did that. So how come they are that silent in the case of massacre that is happening in Palestine? Okay, we're not expecting any good thing from Westerners, mm-hmm. from Easterners, from other countries, from Muslim countries. So we are living in a savage world that all are silent when, I mean, a wolf is killing and is chewing up the bodies of people and no one says anything. And even more dreadful than that is the support that America and U.S. is making, and the support is that U.S. is giving to Israel to claim that they are defending their rights. What right? Where did it come from? Where did it come from? How can you say that they are defending their rights? Are you humans? Are you, I mean, humanistically speaking, not Islamically mm-hmm. speaking. Are you humans? Are you, do you believe in human rights? Do you believe in the human rights of your own people in your own country? What happened to the Davidians in two decades ago in your country when you suffocated, I mean, almost 5,000 of them in a building? Do you care for the human rights? No, these are, I mean, bitter jokes that we are hearing in these day and nights. Yeah. In these days
dark
and nights.
Dark comedy.
And, yeah. So I want to say that they, I mean, we talked about the bad or sad part of the story, but I want to say that they are going to, now we have a proverb in Farsi. We say that an ant, when it is about to die, it has its own wings.
Yeah, yeah, I know that.
Right?
I think. Even in Arabic, we have the same.
Yeah. Do you know Arabic?
I don't know. It was in a textbook of my actually previous school.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have a proverb that says an ant, when it is about to die, it will have wings.
Wings.
Yeah.
So when we see this pressure and this, let's say, massacre that is actually aggravated day by day in mm-hmm. Israel, it yeah. means that it is, inshallah,
the
hopefully, the near-death time of the Israel.
Inshallah.
And it will be so, hopefully. So they are putting all these pressures on the Palestinians to threaten them, but it will actually... It will make them stronger. But it will make them stronger, hopefully. And we are hopeful, as we have seen... day in and day out, we have seen this strength that's shown itself, and it is being seen in the behavior of the Palestinian combatant in the Palestinian area, the Palestinian land.
Thank you, Brother Ali. Actually, you answered two of my questions that I wanted to ask here. The first, you talked about Israeli people and the differentiation between Judaism and Zionism, which is really important to keep in mind here. And also, you answered this question that are they stronger than ever or not? And what does that mean, this strength? And you answered beautifully to this question that it may be the sign that they are near to their end. And these actually decade. But a question that is not answered here yet is that what is the root, what is the reason of this crime? And why, if there is a special root or reason for these crimes, Israel is still declining and just not accepting these kind of things that they are committing. Brother Sinan Amalier.
Before actually answering the main question, I would like to point out to something that...
Yeah.
Are they actually stronger when you asked? As we can see, according to the analysis and the news and everything at the reality, we see the decline of Israel. So it definitely doesn't mean they're stronger, they're getting stronger. But yeah, it sure means that, you know, of course, due to the technological advances have made their crimes much bigger. That's due to the technology and, like, compared to the previous early years. So their crimes are now on a bigger scale. But it doesn't mean that they have become stronger. So, and for the next question, like, the reason behind these crimes, I would like to quote here Ayatollah Khamenei. He mentions in his book, The Palestine. He says that, you know, the reason and the purpose behind committing these crimes is that they want to make two things clear to the people of the world. One thing is that this cancerous tumor should be preserved at any price. Another thing is that they want to convince the world that it is faced with coercion and bullying and that they do not care what is said about them.
Yeah.
So they just, you know, they don't care about, like, whatever is being told to them. So also we have, as brother has already mentioned, you know, the countries... they don't really care what Israel does, and Israel really doesn't care about the, as he brother also pointed towards, the human rights. So they don't really care about the human rights as such. And so this is to say that they want to convince the people of the world that no kind of reasoning and no kind of action will be successful against their evil thoughts and their evil plannings.
Yeah. Brother Ali, do you have to...
Yes, there is another point that I wanted to say with regard to the silence of the world,
international yeah.
arena. We have to add one more dimension to that, and the silence of Muslim Ummah. But we have to differentiate between this silence and the other silence. The silence of Muslim Ummah is not due to their indifference towards the issue. It is due to lack of good leaders in Islamic world rather than the people. So we have to differentiate within this silence of people with regard to the crimes that is happening in Palestine and the ones that we see from the West. From the West, I mean, naturally, based on their claims and whatever they actually they usually show as the slogans, that they have deafened the ears of the whole world, that we are the defenders of human rights, and they are in reality. Vice versa. But the Muslims do not dare to say anything in front of, I mean, with regard to the pressure that comes to them from the side of their governments. For example, in some neighboring countries, Islamic neighboring countries, which of them can come, for example, into streets and, let's say, show this disagreement or objection with Israel crimes? Some countries we have, for example, we have some countries in the Islam world that they're stance is really outstanding, but they're quite silent in these areas, in these issues. Have you ever heard of any demonstrations, any riots, or any demonstrations or any slogans against Israel there? No. But it might be even the center of the Islamic Ummah, I mean, from physically speaking, right? Or another Islamic country, which is the neighbor of Palestine. I mean, they in order to protect the Palestinians, they stop closing their borders with Palestine.
So they're letting the Palestinians in.
So is it really the stance of the people? No. It is the state stance of the, I mean, due to the useless or coward leaders of their countries. So why should they be indifference Why should they be indifferent towards the crime that comes to the people there? But the people in Islamic Ummah actually are silent, and the reason is this. But if you want to see the exact idea of the people, Muslims, about the Israel and the crimes that is happening there, go and perform what you had and ask your Muslim brothers and sisters there to know what the Islam world thinks.
And inshallah, one day we'll defeat, with the help of Allah and the support of Allah behind us, we'll defeat these dark side of the story, and the sun will shine brighter than every day. Thank you for listening to us, dear listeners. And it was all the time we had for today's episode. I bid you farewell. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Alaykum assalam.
Every day we tell each other that this day will be the last, and tomorrow we all can go home free, and all this will finally end. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Father, to wipe away my tears, that's why I will cry. I feel scared, but I won't show my fears. I keep my head high, deep in my heart, I never have any doubt. The Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
The Limelight.
The Nakba is not merely a past event. It is an ongoing reality Palestinians live, where every day brings more killings, closures, detentions, home demolitions, racial discrimination, humiliation, and segregation by the Zionist regime. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote in this regard, "In the Palestinian memory, the month of May will always be associated with the Nakba, the ethnic cleansing of the native Palestinian population from their homes and lands in 1947 to 49 was foundational to the creation of the fabricated regime of Israel. It was only with the forced expulsion of 750,000 to 1 million Palestinians, as well as the killing of thousands of others, many in tens of masses across Palestine, that the emerging Zionist regime could secure a Jewish majority. But clearly, the colonial regime is not yet feeling either satisfied or safe. On the contrary, this month, May 2023, 75 years after the Nakba, Palestine has endured a series of new Israeli regime assaults. On May 2nd, the Palestinian prisoner Khaz Adnan died in an Israeli regime jail after nearly 3 months of hunger strike. He embarked on hunger strike in protest at his administrative detention. Detention without charge or trial. Adnan spent 8 years on and off in Israeli regime prison, mostly in administrative detention. His death could not have been an accident. The Zionist regime was aware that he needed urgent health care, yet none was proffered and was not transferred to hospital. He was allowed to die on purpose in order to deter other prisoners from engaging in similar hunger strikes. His death triggered a major Israeli regime assault, which started on May 9th, when Israeli regime warplanes struck a number of residential buildings in Gaza where families were sleeping. The first strikes killed 12 and injured 20. Among the victims were three Islamic Jihad fighters, along with their wives and children. That first assault was followed by several others over 5 days. At least 33 Palestinians were killed, the majority civilians, including 7 children. The fabricated regime of Israel has killed some 140 Palestinians in both the West Bank and Gaza since the beginning of 2023. Since the 1948 Nakba, the Zionist regime has killed over 100,000 Palestinians and destroyed at least 130,000 homes and other structures. Since the occupation of the rest of historic Palestine in 1967, the Zionist regime has imprisoned more than 1 million Palestinians, while still depriving Palestinian refugees from returning to their homes and villages. And in recent years, May has become the killing month. In 2021, an Israeli regime assault on Al-Quds Al-Aqsa Mosque led to a broad confrontation with Palestinians across Palestine, resulting in the killing of 256 Palestinians in Gaza, including 66 children and 40 women. Last May, an Israeli sniper killed renowned Palestinian journalist Shirin Abu Aghla while she was working in Jenin. A few days later, Israeli regime police attacked her funeral in Al-Quds. Such wanton violence suggests that the Zionist regime's ethnic cleansing project has not finished. A regime based on aggression and the systematic terrorizing of Palestine's native population will not rest easy until the project started in 1948 is complete. But in 75 years, the Zionist regime has not yet succeeded to back up its foundational lie that Palestine was a land with no people by obliterating the Palestinian people, their memory, their history, or their refusal to give up. In other words, the Zionist regime is fearful and agitated. It lives in constant obsession with being surrounded by danger. In light of such logic, the existence of Palestinians in Palestine alone is incendiary to the colonial regime of Israel. After the latest Israeli regime aggression on Gaza, which saw at least 6 Islamic Jihad leaders assassinated, the Zionist regime projected arrogance. Benjamin Netanyahu, the Zionist regime's prime minister, declared that Israel's assault had changed the balance of deterrence and proudly announced that Israel's flag march and annual right-wing nationalist assertion of sovereignty over occupied Al-Quds would proceed as planned. Stable and sane countries do not feel the need to prove sovereignty over cities they claim as capitals. It is a symbol of deep-seated malaise that the Zionist regime considers it a glorious victory after 56 years of occupation to organize a march for settlers to wave flags in Al-Quds. The flag march is a victory only in the way the Israeli regime's military ability to kill and detain Palestinians or encage them in checkpoints is a victory. It is made possible only through overwhelming force and the continued support of Western regimes. The hollow victory is not a defeat for Palestinians who continue to struggle and resist to preserve their existence despite the tremendous suffering and military violence they have to confront. The Zionist regime cannot give up its inherently violent colonial nature precisely because it was established by uprooting a people from their homeland. The continued presence of Palestinians on part of their land directly contradicts the Zionist narrative of how the fabricated regime of Israel emerged. The fabricated regime of Israel is still in denial and believes the only way for it to continue to exist is through the ethnic cleansing and cancellation of Palestine's indigenous people. Every new Israeli crime maximizes Palestinian suffering, but it also demonstrates that far from being confident and at ease with itself, the Zionist regime is a regime of fear and insecurity. Meanwhile, Wafa News Agency reported recently the Israeli occupation authorities demolished, confiscated, or forced people to demolish 42 structures in East Al-Quds and Area C of the West Bank, including 17 homes, citing the lack of Israeli-issued building permits, which are almost impossible to obtain, displacing 50 Palestinians, including 23 children, and affecting the livelihoods of more than 600 others, according to the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, in the occupied Palestinian territory. It said in its bi-weekly Protection of Civilians report covering the first 2 weeks of May that 9 of the structures were provided by donors as humanitarian assistance, including a school. More than half of the affected structures were in Area C, which is under full Israeli regime military control, including a donor-funded school. The remaining 16 structures were demolished in occupied East Al-Quds, including 2 residential structures demolished in Wadi Qadum area of Selwan, resulting in the displacement of 7 households comprising 39 people, including 22 children. Another 7 structures were destroyed by their owners to avoid the payment of fines to the Zionist regime authorities. Additionally, in Area A of the West Bank, under full Palestinian rule, Israeli regime forces destroyed one residential structure and caused damage to three others during an Israeli regime operation carried out in the old city of Nablus. On May 7th, Israeli regime forces demolished an EU-funded Palestinian school serving at least 40 pupils from Jebel al-Deeb near Beit Lahm, citing the lack of an Israeli-issued building permit and structural safety concerns. 57 schools across the West Bank are at risk of demolition, said OCHA. In a separate incident, on May 10th, the Israeli Civil Administration, along with Israeli regime forces, dismantled and confiscated two tents that were used as temporary classrooms for the pupils of the school of Jebel al-Deeb. The tents were provided as humanitarian assistance in response to the demolition on May 7th. During the confiscation, confrontations erupted between Palestinian residents and the Zionist regime forces. As a result, 8 Palestinians were injured. School equipment, including chairs and desks, were confiscated by Israeli regime forces. On May 2nd and 3rd, Israeli regime forces raided the villages of Hadja in Gal Gilea Governorate and Haris in Salfit Governorate in Area B of the West Bank, which is under Palestinian administration and the Zionist regime military control, and demolished on punitive grounds two multiple-story homes of families. Three households comprising 14 people, including 8 children, were displaced. 9 others, including 3 children, were otherwise affected. Since the beginning of 2023, 10 homes and 1 agricultural-related structure have been demolished by the Zionist regime forces on punitive grounds, compared with 14 structures in all of 2022 and 3 in 2021. Punitive demolitions are a form of collective punishment and as such are illegal under international law as they target the families of a perpetrator or alleged perpetrator, said OCHA. In addition to the demolitions, the OCHA report said that from the beginning of 2023 until May 15th, the Zionist regime forces killed 108 Palestinians in the West Bank, including Istal Quds, more than double the death toll of 51 in the same period in 2022. And 12 other Palestinians have been shot and killed by Israeli regime forces while attacking or trying to attack forces in the West Bank.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.